FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome, and you are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz. It's April 17th, 2018. Well, hey, first, as always, we invite you to be part of the show. Got a lot of feedback on Gerald Celente yesterday, running about 4-1 against, but Gerald is a great guy. Love having him on. Love the way he stirs up the mud. But if you want to participate, email us, kl@kerrylutz.com. The hotline for now, 914-424-4142. So, retirement. If you're like me, you're probably a little bit behind on your retirement, especially if you're self-employed. Sometimes stuff happens. You can't save. You can't save as much as you want. You can't invest as much as you want. But you got to still plan for it because it's what's going to happen. We're all getting older, in case you hadn't noticed. Well, one of the country's foremost leading authorities on all of this, on Social Security, on retirement planning, is Professor Lawrence Kotlikoff of Boston University, where my daughter Brittany attended and got great jobs as a result of it. Professor Kotlikoff, welcome back to the show.
Great to be with you.
Hey, so obviously we're undersaved for retirement as a society. A very small percentage of people either have jobs where the money's been put away for you or has been able to save the funds. So this represents a potential crisis, doesn't it?
We've got 10,000 baby boomers retiring every day. 20% are wholly dependent on Social Security. For another 30%, their primary source of income is Social Security. And for another 20% on top of that, their second most important source of income is Social Security. So that's telling you that people haven't done much saving at all beyond what the government forced them to do. And of course, the corporations have gotten out of the defined benefit pension system. It used to be that, you know, for most, not most, but probably 40% of retirees, they could count on a nice corporate pension when they retired. But that was costing the companies too much money, even though they promised people that they had these pension benefit accrual formulas that said, look, if you work late in life and earn a higher salary and, you know, really put out for us and take a lower pay earlier on, we're going to give you, you're going to accrue a lot higher benefits in your last years of work. And starting with IBM in the 1980s, these companies started to renege on that promise. They basically broke contracts. They weren't legal contract, written contracts, but they were implicit contracts, and they screwed workers. And they said, no, you know, your defined benefit plan is now frozen. What you get instead is a defined contribution plan. We're going to put a little bit of money in to help you, but otherwise you're kind of on your own. And so they got out of that game. The state and local pensions are, in many cases, in dire straits because they've been using malfeasant accounting and malfeasant accountants and malfeasant accounting companies to underfund their pensions for decades and also invest at risk in an inappropriate, non-fiduciary manner. So you got that. You got the fact that Americans just don't. You know, we have this spending mentality. Everybody wants to keep up with the Joneses. So nobody's saving. Our national saving rate is at pretty much a record low. It's about 4%. That's not a record low, but it was 15% in 1950. It's basically been heading downhill since 1950. And the, a lot of people just don't have any wealth when they come in. The ones who are saving are the rich. The poor are coming into old age without much beyond Social Security in their house. So, tough situation.
It really is a tough situation. It's awful when you look at it because you just have to plug in the numbers. I mean, you're an economist. Basically, it all comes down to the numbers. And it's so predictable that you'll wind up in this situation. If you just plugged in the numbers 10 years ago, you might have been able to avoid it, right? And even now, though, there are things that you can do, even if you're undersaved for retirement, isn't there?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, you know, as you know, Kerry, I've been involved in now for 25 years in trying to bring economics-based financial planning to households through my software company. And we have a tool now that's just $99. It's called MaxifiPlanner.com, MaxifiPlanner.com. And you can put your information in there. The program will come back and say, look, here's how much. We're not going to ask you what you'd like to spend, because what you'd like to spend is irrelevant. Here's what you can afford to spend and keep on spending it. We're going to do lifetime budgeting and give you a lifetime plan for how much to spend every year so you can maintain your living standard. Now, if you haven't saved and you hope to retire early, then guess what? Your living standard is going to be much lower than would otherwise have been the case, but at least you won't go from eating something to eating nothing, or eating cat food from 1 year to the next. This is a plan to get through to 100, because our default maximum age of life is 100. So there are tools for people to use that I've been providing. I can't say, you know, honestly, that there's any other software program out there that does this kind of lifetime budgeting. It's the most straightforward thing in economics. It's the idea of consumption smoothing, of maintaining your living standard. It's all very physiological. We don't want to eat every steak we're ever going to eat right this minute. We want to spread out those steaks over the rest of our life, because otherwise we get sick to our stomachs. So it's all based on work done by Irving Fisher in 1930. He wrote a book called The Theory of Interest, Yale economist. And he developed a basic economic theory of consumption smoothing. And it's really underlying everything in finance, not just saving. And it's also underlies the theory of insurance. It underlies the theory of portfolio diversification, asset pricing. All this stuff is predicated on consumption smoothing. And if you look at the actual industry, there's nothing about consumption smoothing in any of the big financial planning tools like eMoney or MoneyGuide Pro or NavaPlan. None of these tools incorporate consumption smoothing. They all start out by asking the client how much you want to save for retirement, how much you want to spend in retirement. So rather than answering the question, which is the key question, coming up with the answer internally, they force the client to do the work. And of course, the client can't come up with the right answer. It's extremely complicated. It's beyond any human being's abilities by a long shot. And so people throw up their hands, and then the financial software is all geared up to set a very high spending level for you in retirement, which of course you can't make because you're not saving enough. So the next part of the bait and switch is that the planners who are using the software tell you, well, look, if you invest in our high yield securities, then the probability of making your target, now it becomes your target, is much higher. And what they don't show you is that the probability of you're losing your shirt is much higher.
Yeah, risk, so reward. It's
this
all comes
is all
down.
A kind of a bait and switch con job of conventional financial planning. It's called the conventional financial planning, to get people to pay higher fees and take on more risk than is appropriate. So then really what happens is that this target is set probably too high, and then you end up you're forced to consume too little when you're young, because to try and make that target, you have to also save more. And you get what's called consumption disruption. You don't get a smooth ride. You don't come to retirement and have the same living standard after retirement. You have maybe a higher one, much higher. Now, you might say that's a good thing. Well, it's a good thing, except if you die the next day after you retire. Then it was a stupid thing.
Yeah,
it's the same thing. It's also a stupid thing to splurge today and hit retirement and have your living standard drop 30%. And that can also happen if you set the target too low. If you so, either way, this and then you know, if you want me to continue ranting on conventional financial planning,
absolutely.
Of course, I'm self-interested because I have my own software company that doesn't do this kind of stuff. But when it comes to analyzing people's portfolios, the assumption is that you're going to be spending at that target level that you've set or the software has set for you, and that is generally too high. And you're going to be spending at that level through retirement no matter what, no matter whether or not you get high or low returns on the market if you've invested in the market. So what the analysis does is it says, well, let's look at your current saving. Let's just kind of accumulate. Let's take draws of returns on the assets you're going to be holding. And then we're going to sort of see how much your savings will add up to before you hit retirement. And then now at retirement, you've got this amount of wealth. And then we're going to draw that down based on your spending target. But we're going to also be drawing from your portfolio of assets you're going to be holding in retirement. And we're going to figure whether you're going to run out of money. Now, the basis of this is that you're going to spend exactly the same amount of money year after year, no matter whether the stock market drops in half or three quarters or 90% as it did in the 1930s, or 60% as it did back in 2008 to 2009, or 50% as it dropped between 2000 and 2002. People panic. They get out of the market. They adjust their spending because that's what economics says they should do. They should adjust their spending. If you didn't do well in the marketplace this year, you had lousy returns or negative returns. Common sense and basic economics says you cut your spending because you don't want to have to cut it by even more in the future. That's called consumption smoothing, and that's what our software is. Incorporates what we incorporate in our Monte Carlo simulations. We show you the trajectories of your living standard, taking into account the fact that you will adjust your spending every year based on what returns you receive.
Yeah, well, you know, there's so many factors that go into it, and it really is complicated. If you're an average person who hasn't studied investment and things like how you figure out rate of return, all these factors, it really is a huge mystery. So when you've got a program available like yours, Professor, it really takes the guesswork out of it. And look, I remember my son graduated from college 3 years ago. We went out to a restaurant. Of course, I was paying high-end restaurant in Austin, Texas. And my son-in-law said, we should all go around the table and give Brandon some advice. And I don't remember what everyone else said, but I said to him, look, from my position here, a little bit older than you, maybe not much wiser, but definitely have seen more of life than you. The only thing I can suggest to you is that you start saving now, as early as possible, as much as you possibly can. Not to say that you should be living in a cell with no amenities. You know, you want to enjoy life, but you'll find that the joy of deferred consumption, which results in savings, is far greater than any kicks you're going to get now from blowing a lot of money. And it's just figured, hey, he's a kid. He's not going to listen to me. Kids seldom ever listen to their parents anyway. But after that, I came to find out, this is 3 years later, he's been saving 20% of his after-tax income and participating fully in all of the retirement plans available to him and his numerous employers. And that is the one piece of advice coupled with, hey, you're 21 years old. Get this planner now. It's never too early to start planning for your retirement. Let's hope that everything is the way it is. Dollar will still buy something in 20 years. Who the heck knows? I think you have to act as if it's going to be that way because you don't know what the future is going to be. But imagine teaching personal financial education to a class where they actually learn this stuff, Professor. I mean, that's...
Yeah, well, and that's where we put up a version of our software for free. And I was hoping that people, high school teachers, would adopt it for the classroom and just, you know, use it. It's, anybody can go and play with it. It's ESPlanner.com, ESPlanner.com/basic. And so it's a simplified version of our Maximify Planner program. And it's right there, sitting there. The interface is not super modern, but it's fine. It's quite clear. The program works perfectly well, and it's updated. So any high school kid in the country or any college kid can use that for free if they don't want to afford the $99, which has more bells and whistles. So it's just kind of getting the word out in this vast sea of competition where you have all these different investment companies with their own products saying that they've got the truth.
Sure.
It's just 25 years, we haven't made a huge dent yet in that market.
Hey, but, well, needed. Yeah. It sure is needed. And really, the live just for today mentality is reflected in the puny savings rate. You know, real wealth comes from savings. It doesn't come from printing money. It doesn't come from inflating the currency. It's all about savings, deferred compensation, right?
Saving and investing, Doing something productive with your saving, right?
You're saving in the expectation of earning a return. And if you're a savvy investor, you might earn a really good return. But if you're a mediocre investor who relies upon others who are pretty decent, you'll still be so much further ahead. You know, Einstein, the old saying, the most powerful law in the world is the law of compounding interest, right?
Yeah.
So...
Did Einstein actually say that?
Well, it's probably a misattributed quote, but I've seen it enough times. I'm going to check that out. And if any of you know or have proof that Einstein said the most powerful law in the world is the law of compounding interest, please email it to us at kl@carrylutz.com. I'll research it as well, but I believe he did say it. I think I've read it in some of his writings. Unfortunately, it's not just the individual who's screwed up here. These state pension plans, so they're defined benefit plans. Employees put in a small portion, the state, the municipalities put in the remainder, and they managed to screw that up too, Professor. What are they supposed to do?
Yeah. Well, you know, we've been engaged in massive Ponzi schemes at the federal and state and local levels for And also, I really think at the corporate levels for decades. You know, that now the corporations got out from under their Ponzi scheme by by screwing over younger and middle-aged workers by just reneging on promises that they'd made. But a Ponzi scheme is you take from somebody and you give to somebody else, and the money you take from that, the somebody you take the money from, you promise to return with a whole lot more on top of it by going to the next person. So in our context, what we're doing is we're going to, we're giving at the state level money to older state workers. A lot of them were unionized, and the union members and the state bureaucrats conspired together to set up pensions where they would, because they had a lot of service, they've been there a long time, the formula is heavily weighted to service. So people with a lot of service would get a very high benefit. So they rigged the system to make themselves rich in retirement, and then they left the bills for state taxpayers or take it out of the hides of future state public employees in the form of lower wages. So in other words, these were not ever fully funded pension arrangements. It was always take from somebody else to give to the elderly. And then they doubled down on the malfeasance by thinking that they could earn what small amounts of money they put into, put aside as a pension fund. They invested it in the stock market. And historically, the stock market's made 7% after inflation. 7-8%. We're going to take the obligations that we've promised to pay, the benefits are projected out into the future. We're going to discount them into the present at a 7 or 8% rate to figure out their value, and then we know how much we actually owe, measured as a present value. we look at these liabilities and we say, okay, so now we can compare our pension fund with the size of these, of this liability measured as a present value. Now, the problem is that if you discount it 8%, you're discounting it a discount rate that's appropriate when you're discounting a risky stream of payments that has highs, you know, ups and downs, but it's not appropriate when you have a safe obligation, a sure thing that you have to make these payments to these retired policemen or teachers or whatever. So you should be discounting not at 8%, but today you'd be discounting at 1%, which is the return on inflation index bonds, long-term inflation index bonds. That's our long-term safe rate of return, 1%, not 8%. Now, the difference between discounting somebody's pension that we might be receiving it 20 years or 30 years in the future at 8% and 1%, the difference between those two things is like night and day. And so by using the 8% discount rate, these municipalities and state governments reduced the size of their liability astronomically. They made it look like they had no real obligation. And then, so first of all, you understate your liability. And then secondly, you take the assets, the small assets you actually have, and you put them at risk rather than doing what the right thing is, which is you've got this obligation. It's a sure thing. You should invest, you should put aside money and invest it in long-term inflation index bonds that are going to come due when the obligations are going to come due. So you're going to match your liability with your assets and not suffer any potential for any exposure where you can't meet the obligations. But right now we're sitting and looking at states like Illinois and California and New Jersey, as I understand, that are basically where they've bankrupted their, I don't know whether they bankrupt the whole state, but it may be close to that in some of these states. Again, there's not any real reckoning, appropriate accounting, because it's being done by people that aren't economists. You know, you would not see any economist caught dead doing the kinds of things that the accountants and the pension actuaries have done for and with these states. It goes beyond anything that Arthur Andersen did with Enron. And you see this, you know, in Detroit. Detroit's pensions were insolvent because of this kind of behavior, and the city didn't put monies aside. The city had other problems, obviously, and so those pensions ended up about 20% underfunded, and if you did the analysis correctly, and that brought down the city of Detroit. Now, our Social Security system is not 20% underfinanced. It's about 34%, according to the latest trustees report of the Social Security system. So Social Security is in far worse shape than the Detroit pensions were when they brought Detroit to its knees.
Yeah, well, that's what we have to look forward to. They're obviously going to have to do something because you can't tax your way out of this. Because if they started taxing to replace the lost expected income, there'd be nothing left. They'd be at 20% tax rates across the country, and it's a little
people
bit
leave
scary.
The country. Yeah, they'll leave the states, and then you know the federal government's got this problem in spades. The federal government is in far worse shape than the states, proportionally speaking. So, and again, I've been hollering about this for a while.
I know.
Since 1984.
We've talked many times. And
yeah, we have. And it's just getting worse. We got this.
Kick the can.
You know,
right? Kick the can down the road.
Kick the can. We got we have a president who doesn't understand thing one about economics. The idea that we should be worried about trade deficits. I have a deficit, trade deficit on an ongoing basis with my barber.
Yeah.
And he's got a trade deficit with his grocery store. He's got a trade surplus with me, but a trade deficit with his grocery store. I mean, if you start, the real concern about our country is we're not saving enough, and therefore foreigners are bringing, are investing in our country for us or instead of us.
Yeah.
And when they invest in our country, they have to kind of physically bring capital goods into the country, and that's treated as imports. So the source of our trade deficit is the importing of goods and services for people to invest, to do their investing in the U.S. Now, that's a good thing for U.S. workers because they have more capital to work with, but it gets recorded as a trade deficit. The bad thing for the American public is that we're not saving, so that our future won't be as bright as it would otherwise be. But we don't want to keep people from investing in the U.S. So if you start screaming about trade deficits, you're really screaming about, you're either screaming about Americans saving too little, or you're screaming about foreigners investing in your country. Well, you should be screaming about Americans saving too little. If Trump knew anything, he would say that people aren't saving enough. But of course, he made all his money probably in what I expect to be illegal ways. So we can't really talk about saving because I don't think he's
Let's not get political. He comes from a long line of presidents who knew absolutely nothing about economics and were only too happy to demonstrate their ignorance on the topic, which is why we're
in the mess. Yeah, this goes beyond anything I've seen in any president I've been around. I'm not a Republican or a Democrat. And also, when I say illegal, you know, this guy has a long history of involvement with mobsters from Russia and to the U.S. Mafia.
Sounds like
really
Hillary
start looking
Clinton.
At the history.
Sounds like Hillary.
Well, Clinton. Clinton.
Uranium won.
Vote for them.
Uranium
won. I actually ran against both Clinton and Trump.
I didn't see your name on the ballot, Professor. I would have voted for you because at least you know what the problems are.
I was a registered writing candidate in Florida.
I didn't bring a pen.
Get registered. You need a pen. But
I know what you're saying. It's frustrating.
That could legally have been elected. No, I don't think. I think Hillary's land deal and the things that Bill pulled off. I'm not at all a fan of the Clintons. Trust me.
You can't be.
nobody can. And these people are out for themselves. I think Clinton was a failed president. He achieved nothing to deal with any of our major problems. Not a single thing.
Nothing.
In 8 years. And then all his relationships with women who claimed he was sexually abusive. That's real stuff there. That's real immorality, potentially.
Immorality.
Yeah, we could go on at length. We could have a whole show about my views on Clinton. But
the politicians.
I'm not sure they were. Yeah.
They're sociopaths. They're all sociopaths. Right. That's why they go where they go. Hey, anyway, Professor, we got to go as well. Just give us some websites where we find all of this work that you've done.
Okay, well, the main company website is economicsecurityplanning.com. And then the most recent tool we have, and you'll find there Social Security tools, Social Security tool, a tool for if you're getting divorced. There's this Maxify Planner tool, which helps you figure out a whole lifetime budgeting plan. So economicsecurityplanning.com. And then my own personal website is kotlikoff.net. And there you'll see all the articles I write. I post them immediately. And, you know, please spread them around if you like them, because the more people get to read them, the more I'll write.
Absolutely, Professor. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And hey, questions, comments, be part of the discussion. Email kl@kerrylutz.com, and we'll direct any of your questions right to the good professor, Professor Kotlikoff. It's always great having you on the show, and we'll talk to you again real soon. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Kerry.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.